All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk, meeting 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's approximately 10 o'clock, March 12th, 2013. We're meeting for a work session on case number PU-12-509, Basin Electric Power Cooperative's Pioneer Generation Station. We held a hearing up in that region not too long ago, so this is the first chance the commissioners have had to go through it. Before I give my thoughts, I'll just open it up to my colleagues if they have any opening comments or direction.
I don't have a lot to say at the beginning here, except for that it's nice dealing with something that kind of originated since Julie and I are on the commission, and where we actually got to attend the hearings and look people in the eye and ask our own questions and that sort of thing. So I'm kind of enjoying the process of this one working its way through.
Absolutely. Perfect.
I have no opening comments.
Okay, perfect. We don't really have a set format, we being the commission, that we've done on these. Typically, I'll give you my thoughts on this one. This one, there, of the hearings that we do, this one, to my opinion, was not very controversial. So a lot of times we'll start out, if there is things that are controversial, we'll talk about where we're at on that as a commission. And then the council, Matt is here and Jerry's here, might give us some of their thoughts. And then Jerry has today an order that, you know, if we don't have any big issue items that are sticking points that we need to work through, a lot of times we'll just kind of walk through the order. So that's the way I'd see this, but I'd open it up to Matt or Jerry if there's anything that you saw in the hearing that jumped out at you that we should be really concerned about. Maybe start with our general counsel, and then we'll let Jerry play cleanup.
Again, my name is Matt Sagsveen. I'm an assistant attorney general in the attorney general's office. During the hearing itself, there was maybe one issue that I was interested in hearing more testimony on, and that was the extent to which PGS 1, the first facility, had started in the relationship between the two facilities, because the commission did not permit PGS 1. I was interested to hear how they explained the difference, and I don't know that I think I learned more enough to know that they were two distinct facilities, but I think the decision as to how to treat those is something maybe to consider in the future, but how that relates to how that testimony relates to this order, I think it's important because I think it clarified, I'm just kind of babbling here, but I think it clarified the issue that, in my mind, that maybe the PGS-1 didn't necessarily need to be part of this permit process, but I think I guess that's up to the commission to decide.
But set the stage, though, the follow-on question I asked, they're going to do a PGS 4, 5, and 6 if they'd come back to the commission. And they basically said, no, they wouldn't. But I thought, I mean, clearly there's, 135 megawatts that are going to be up there now. If they'd add another 45, that would, be, in my opinion, would be extending the footprint what they have now, which would be jurisdictional. So do we put something in the order now that would say, if you come back to build, if you do build more, you should come see us?
We already have in the certification document an agreement from them that they will come back.
Okay,
and if they put anything else in there to permit it.
Matt, to get just to make sure I'm understanding, your concern was they came in, built the small plant that didn't require involvement, shortly thereafter expanded it. And why weren't they – so your concern was, were they sneaking in under the requirements so they didn't have to go through the PSC process? And then you – because we did ask a lot of questions about, you know, why didn't you know about this sooner, what changed? And they did seem to satisfy at least me when we saw the spike in their load increases. It's like, yeah, the game changed quickly and this is – what resulted. So is that kind of your concern on the front end going in?
That was my concern, okay. Commissioner. I'm sorry if my comments weren't clear. My concern was they started construction. There was a little ambiguity prior to the hearing about when the decision-making process mm-hmm. took place. I think that was resolved in my mind at the hearing. And then they started this, the first PGS-1, and then they applied for PGS-2 shortly thereafter. And so I was a little, in my mind, I was concerned jurisdictionally if you start PGS-1 and then you start construction of PGS-2 before PGS-1 is finished, is it all one project? And so I think the testimony was that PGS-1 was going to be finished in April, and PGS-2 isn't even going to get started until the summer of 2013. So as the testimony was further explained, it seemed to me that there was a bigger separation between the two than I had originally thought. And so that, I think you've kind of captured my original concern. Jerry, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think the record shows that they initiated phase one before their load forecast results came in, and before they realized, I mean, I think they knew when they were putting this together that sometime they're going to need, or probably will need, some additional turbines on this site, and they built it or designed it to accommodate them, but they weren't intending to do it at that time. So,
is it possible for us to require people to come in permit, even if it's not required by law?
I mean, it'd be tough. No, no, but if you afterwards discover something that was built without being cited and should have been cited, then we've had them go through the citing process even though it's already built.
Like if you see a project that you think is jurisdictional to us that they didn't go through with us, you can request us to make a determination. If we determine it is jurisdictional, then just like Jerry said, we've gone out and cited pipelines after they were in the ground because they started out they felt they weren't jurisdictional. They did something that made them jurisdictional.
And not to get focused on this because I don't know that it's super relevant, but so in the instance where they're kind of adding on to facilities like this and it goes from 45 to 90 to, you know, 135, and it can we just say we believe those to be the sum total from any time it reaches past the threshold of our siting, and so all those need to be coming to us for siting, or is that a legislative matter?
You know, I think we could have said that we believed that they had 135 megawatt project there in phases, and only they started their phase one without doing the siting of the whole thing.
We saw this in wind farms where they were doing like three small wind farms, and then finally we had to get involved and say, no, these are the same wind farm. They're connected.
Yeah.
But if we did say that, you know, I would think that Basin would probably feel that wasn't right and possibly appeal that, and the record might not support us.
Matthew's had a question.
One way to possibly deal with adding on to a facility is to look at the jurisdictional issue closer to the application stage or more up front, as opposed to when you're all the way down the line to the hearing. I think you might be able to accomplish more if you determine that the addition to the original facility makes the first jurisdictional, so then the applicant has time to amend their application to include additional information in the application that might be helpful for the commission. But when you get so far along in at the hearing stage, it's a little difficult to look back and say, oh, we even though we determined your application was sufficient up front, we're saying now that you should have amended your application to include the first facility.
I might add that we got the same situation going on at Watford City. so we're going to see it again.
But going forward, though, I thought you just reassured me that if they're going to build a fourth one, that they're going to tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. Their site permit right now is for this. If they expand it, they're clearly, I think, jurisdictional on it.
Even though that when we asked that question in hearing, they didn't say that.
You know, I'm trying to remember what they...
I asked the question, paraphrase, saying, if Basin's to build a fourth one, you come back in front of us and ask for us to cite it? And then he said, no, we won't agree to that, or something like that.
I'd have to look at the transcript and see what that was. But in here, the agreement they made in here, which I think supersedes the other things. Number 33 reads, company understands and agrees that in the event company desires to construct within any site granted by a certificate of site compatibility in this proceeding, an energy conversion facility that was not requested in company's application in this proceeding, then company shall apply for a certificate of site compatibility for the facility. And then...
What are you reading from, Jerry?
This is the certification document. It's Exhibit 2 in the hearing. Should we make you guys a copy of this real quick?
That wouldn't hurt.
Exhibit 2 that they presented?
It was...
Oh, yeah. I've got copies. You gave us them. If you guys have your file, they handed them out.
You need...
Right. It's probably in your stuff from the hearing. Maybe in your front folder there, Randy. It looks like it might be. Is that certificate?
Mine's Deckler?
Yeah.
It says certification related to order provisions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also attached tree and shrub mitigation.
Let's say that pretty clearly.
Okay.
And then
Pat, you had a concern, though, you were trying to...
I related to Matt.
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
So that gets incorporated into the order by reference. And then there's a phrase in there that, to the extent there are any conflicts or inconsistencies between Basin Electric's application and the February 6, 2013 certification, the certification provisions control.
Matt, yeah.
Mr. Pahn raises a good point about the applicability of paragraph 33 of the certification relating to order provisions. And it kind of goes back to a debate that Jerry and I have been having, is the size of the site that's being cited. Is it 7 acres or is it 120 acres? And the applicant has requested in the order that it be 120 acres, which is nearly all of a quarter, of course. And so if you look at the wording in paragraph 33, company understands and agrees that in the event company desires to construct within any site granted by a certificate of site compatibility. Now, if you just stop there and you look at the 7 acres, you think, can they build anything else on that site? And probably no. But if they build something outside that site, this might not apply. Right. So this kind of lends more credence to Jerry's position that the site should be expanded around the 7 acres to have this be more applicable, or to be to apply to an area greater than 7 acres. And so they have asked for a 120-acre site. It's not necessarily stated that way in their application, nor was it stated that way, I think, in their testimony, but... Mr. Fond raises a very valid point, I think. So,
you know, I think that if they're going to build another turbine there, that it's obviously an expansion of this project and therefore jurisdictional, regardless whether it's 40 megawatts or over the 50 megawatt limit. In the same way that we made decisions like Ashtabula with the wind,
right,
where they came in and wanted to add to the project, and we said yes, it's because they came and asked us for a jurisdictional determination, and we said yes, it's part of the original project, and I would think that same kind of procedure would follow if they want to do something else here.
Okay.
So on this order, is the red our changes?
Yes.
Okay, let's do this. So they did ask for the site consists of the 120 acres. They originally asked for that, and we narrowed it down to 7.
The way it's shown on the certificates, if you look in your application, there are some figures. And you'll see a figure 2 is probably a good example. It shows a fenced-in area. And that fenced-in area is a little under 7 acres. We're pretty much restricting this to that area. It's not restricted to just the fence, but the way we define this project, the project is just the 2 additional turbines. So
right,
they had an existing project going there already. The phase 1 would include things like the driveway and stuff like that that's getting built in. Phase 2 would really consist of the 2 additional turbines and the facilities necessary for them, including a... No, not including. Never mind.
So why didn't we include the whole site? Because if we did, then number 33 would apply, and they'd have to come back to us. Why didn't we include the 120 acres?
We didn't cite Project 1, the first turbine. It's already under construction. And they gave us the convincing reason that it's not jurisdictional.
In response to your question, if I could interrupt.
Yeah.
Sorry. Jerry and I have been debating this, and I thought that it would, since they asked to locate the PGS-2 on a 7-acre site, that the siting should apply only to the area which they designated as the PGS facility. And so I was surprised when they were asking for 120 acres, mm-hmm, and thinking to myself, if they've only asked to locate it on 7, why are they asking for the 120? What?
There must be some relevance, though, if we would approve the 120 acres on the back to that corridor law, that they could do whatever they want inside there once we've cited for that.
Well, and I asked Jerry that question, and that was my concern, is that if it was cited for 120, they could...
Since that law change, we've really tried to narrow the focus of what we actually cite because of that concern.
But if we're concerned about them coming back and building a 45 megawatt plant and not going through the siting, they can do that. If we left it at 120, they've agreed to come back and check with us.
Well, they.
If we narrow it to 7, they're outside of that site. And they have agreed, they said they would, within any site granted by the Certificate of Site Capacity, they'd come back, but they didn't agree to it if they were outside of it, so they could do a 45 megawatt without coming back.
My position or my thought would be that if they try to build it inside the site permit area, there are some provisions in the law now that say that they can put whatever they want inside a certificate area, and that's the purpose for having this in there. If we narrow the certificate area down, then that thought that they can put whatever they want in there anymore doesn't apply it to as big an area.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, let me add another.
Aren't I saying the same thing as you?
Kind of.
Let me add another variable to this. If you look back at the language of 33, of paragraph 33, company understands and agrees that in the event company desires to construct within any site granted by a certificate of site compatibility in this proceeding, an energy conversion facility. So even if it's 120, if they constructed a 45-megawatt facility, that doesn't necessarily qualify as a by definition under your rules or laws as an energy conversion facility. So arguably, even if you have a 120-acre site, and they put a 45 outside, it may not. This order may not apply because it's not technically an energy.
You could play the what if game a lot though, because this is the wind saga again. We can put something in our order that says we would view an additional site in this area as an extension of this project. We could put that in here somewhere and just clarify it even further.
I would think though that's always true.
Right.
I mean, to put it in the order kind of implies that there might be some times when it's not true.
Well, let's do this. Let's plow through. Let's table this issue for a little bit to make some progress on the other stuff. And let's just start at the top here and kind of, Jerry, walk us through it, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of what I'm envisioning today is we're not going to do this all in 1 hour. So we'll get through what we can and then see what questions are out there, and then we'll quickly get.
Sure. Let me just start here. On page one, I just got rid of that paragraph because we usually don't start orders like that.
In the preliminary statement.
Yeah, the first paragraph there. So we start with the letter of intent being filed. And notice in that first paragraph that we say in there that their letter of intent is to construct the Pioneer Generation Station Phase 2, which is we refer to as project. So what we're saying here in this first paragraph is that Phase 2 is what we're citing. And then it just describes what it is. And to be located at the existing site of the Pioneer Generation Station Unit 1, currently under construction.
Is it at the existing site or adjacent to the existing site?
I think at the existing site is...
I'm standing out there. Okay.
And as we go on down, the rest of this is just a matter of kind of just making it sound right to in our usual formats on this page. And we get through the preliminary statement, and we get into the findings of fact then.
Slow down here, Jerry. Let's go one step at a time here. We're on page 3 in the top, right? Because in the findings of fact, sometimes they turn into be a PR for the company. The company will want to put things like, this is the best company ever. And so we are always looking for something like that jumps out. So two, anything in two that's finding in fact one, I didn't see anything there. Randy and Julie, just jump in. Two. Three. Okay, four.
And four, I just wanted to add, since we enforce the National Electric Safety Code, a finding that they're going to comply with it.
I think it had crossed out the surpass. I mean, do we usually put like those kind of adjectives in there?
You're right.
Project will be designed and constructed to meet relevant, you know, I don't know that we need to put surpass in there.
We can lose that.
Well, if you don't, does it limit them to not surpassing it? They have to do it exactly according to a code?
No, not at all.
I don't think it does.
But those are the kind of words that trying to keep the order clean, that come back to you someday. Somebody will have an order and say, you said that they would surpass the NERC fan standards in your order. Show us how they're surpassing them. Well, then, you know, we
own upright basin. Okay, so any questions on page 3 then? Okay. Page 4, if you will. Paragraph 7.
In paragraph 7, I just added a little bit more to that to make it clear what happened, that they had a separation between phase 1 and 2.
Okay. And paragraph 8, Conda, please.
And 8 was just a little bit of rewriting to make it sound better.
Okay. All right.
And 9 again.
9, here we go. Let's get into it again, huh?
Well, just walk me through the rationale of narrowing that site. What are the dangers of having a big site? Approving the 120-acre, what are the advantages to them? Why would they want it that way? What are the risks? Why would we try to narrow it down?
I think they're fine with bringing it down to the 7 acres.
Well, the question, though,
why would they want it big, and why do we want it small?
They purchased a 120-acre parcel there, and they had the zoning on that whole parcel changed to industrial, and a reason for having the whole thing as a site certificate would be if there's an expansion. Later, or whatever reasons that they have to do the whole site. I don't think it makes too much difference, because if they're going to do something in there, we've put in the certificate provisions that they need to come back and talk to us.
But when we did the hearing, though, when we did the hearing, I'm looking at Randy's map here, we didn't ask all the questions relevant on 120 acres. We asked them relevant on the 7-acre plot.
That was Matt's feeling that...
No, I mean, that's where, because I didn't even catch the 120 until I read through this. I'm like, wait a minute. I was up there looking at the little blue dot of 7 acres, and we're talking runoff and cultural things. I mean, if I'd have been in my mind thinking a whole 120 acres, I'd have asked a lot of different questions.
Did they study that whole 120? Did we look at the cultural and the archaeological and the environmental on the whole 120?
They did, but that doesn't mean we have to designate the whole 120.
Right.
And there was a discrepancy in the Corps of Engineers letter that their cover letter said that they discovered a 40-acre site, or they investigated a 40-acre site there. And but yet it shows 120 acres in the map drawing on the attached Corps of Engineers correspondence that would indicate that they probably looked at 120 acres. I don't know what to make of that. But there's also an exhibit showing the area that was cultural resource and field surveyed that showed the 120-acre site. And when they purchased the 120-acre site, part of their investigations and due diligence and stuff with that purchase was to know exactly what's on the whole 120-acre site.
I'm with Brian. I didn't think that we were looking at the whole site either, but I just want to understand, if we did do the 120 acres, could they come in and put, like, substations in there or other things that we just would be blocked out of, or are we?
There's the certificate relating to order provisions that says that they agreed not to.
Okay.
But the language in the law says that maybe they could.
So there's no big advantage to them for getting the 120 acres.
I don't think so, because we're telling them they need to come back to us if they're doing any of that. Making the site approximately seven acres is a further safeguard on that.
Is the normal order of this that we're going to go through and come up with this language and then just do it and that's it? Or are they going to review this, and if there's a big difference to them between 120 and 7 or some other number in between, that they would come back to us and make their case and we could adjust it at that point?
Yeah, I gave them a copy of this draft. When I emailed it to you, I copied them as well. And they're fine with the 7 acres.
And Matt, correct me here if I'm wrong a little bit. Trying to quantify a little bit what you're saying, that it's best, in my opinion, to work through staff with some of the questions back and forth, because if they were to come back in front of us with something else, that'd be like opening up the hearing again. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a give and take, where it is in the sense that if Jerry senses something is not palatable to them, he may bring it back to us for us to consider. But at the end of the day, there may be things that aren't palatable to the company, but we don't care. It's our order. So you put your order out, and they can appeal our order, or they can do something to it. But it is very good to know what we're getting into with some of that. So, but you've talked to them, and they're okay with that.
Yeah.
But back to Matt's point, too, for me, I guess, and others, that do a better job with some of these. I need to do a better job. The portfolio is that when we get these things filed, that we should have caught that right up front and said, okay, give us some information why this isn't part of that. That's what we should have done way back when. And we'll see that in other cases like the Watford City one. That's what we started seeing in the wind hearings. We saw all these little 40-megawatt wind farms popping up that were only half mile apart, sharing mm-hmm. substations.
If you remember, maybe it was Matt, the attorney in that one, one of the ones over here for Minnesota Powers, we actually decreased the size of their project area.
We did the one on New Salem area there. We shrunk it way down because we wanted to.
The project area was bigger than the.
That was needed.
Yeah, than the land around it, and we decreased it. So.
Okay.
So I maybe just want to add one answer to Commissioner Fedorchak's question, and that is, what can they do if it's only a 7-acre site and they own 120? And Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, they can do whatever they want on that 120 acres as long as it's not an energy conversion facility. Is that right?
Or thought to be an extension of this one.
But that's the gray area, of course, because the law doesn't necessarily speak to extensions at this. It might be changed. I think it's changed in the rules, hasn't it? Or was that not part of the change?
I don't think there is a specific spell out on it. It's kind of a precedent thing. In the past, we've considered adding to wind farms and stuff as a new project sometimes, and other times told them, yes, you've made a case that it really is a separate project. And so it's been a case-by-case thing.
So going back to the map, then, anything within, if it's only sited at 7, they still own 120, they can do a lot within that 120 as long as it doesn't fall within the jurisdiction of the commission.
And if we would question that, we can do that. If they would do something that we think is in our jurisdiction, we could say we want this is in our jurisdiction and send something to them saying you need to cite this through us.
So, you know, I guess if call it the whole 120 acres, then if they wanted to modify the site plan and do other things on that 120 acres, they'd have to come and tell us about it.
And why would that be?
We have more leverage over them.
Why would what part of the commit certificate says that they would have to come back to you if they modify the original plan, but as long as it's within the 120 acres?
They agreed in the certificate. Company understands and agrees that it shall inform the commission in writing of any plans to modify the energy conversion facility or of any plans to modify the site plan for the energy conversion facility. company understands and agrees to obtain written approval from the commission prior to any modification to the site plan or the energy conversion facility, associated facilities, and roadway locations. Approval may be granted after notice and opportunity for hearing.
Yeah, so my concern is we think by restricting it to 7 acres, we're tightening the controls or minimizing, you know, their development area. But it sounds like to me if we approve the entire site as 120 acres, we might actually have more leverage with them longer term because we've approved that and they've said they'd come and talk to us if they're doing anything in that area. Is that a correct?
I think that's true, too.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's a real valid analysis.
So it's just a matter of what we want.
Yeah.
I ask questions based on a 7-acre plot. So I think it's 7 acres for me. Otherwise, if we want to do 120 acres, we need to get them back in here again. That's the way I would see it.
Alana's
got
no, the okay.
I just had a thought.
If that's okay with Mr. Sagsby, to let our council speak.
Well, Matt mentioned the new rules, and I didn't think the new rules addressed this, but they do have, and this is the rule before, they do have a whole section for getting jurisdictional determinations. And you, if you did the 7, you could require that whatever they want to do out on the 120 outside the 7, they get a jurisdictional determination. They come in for a jurisdictional determination. You're not saying in the order that it is or isn't jurisdictional. You're saying come and ask. And then I don't know if that would work because Matt's valid point, you know, they promise if they are building a facility which is defined in the law that they come back. If they build something that they don't think meets that definition, they don't have to come back, if I understand correctly. But if you say nobody knows today whether it's going to meet the definition or not, so whatever you want to do, come back and ask for a jurisdictional determination. Would that be a middle ground? I don't know. Just the thought.
I could work that into this order. I can see how I could do it already.
It sort of fits with what Jerry's recalling we've done in the past, but what we did, instead of case by case, is we wrote those questions into the rules. And so that's how you answer the question now, is you follow the rules and provide that information, commission. So it's just a thought.
I'm honestly not advocating for the 120, but I am trying to understand the pros and cons of both. And what are the risks? What are you concerned about with the 120 that gives you pause about doing that?
Because I based the hearing questions on 7 acres. The public input is on 7 acres. I don't like doing, we as a commission, we tend to, whatever the energy project is, once it's all done, we bring it down to as small as we can, like we've done on the wind farms before, because if you leave it really big, why would we cite something that big, not knowing the future impacts of it?
I mean, what could they do in there, though, I guess? I mean, if you're worried about citing it at 120, it must be because they could do something in there.
They could build it. I mean, there's a lot of, obviously, ambiguity back and forth. I think the choice of the commission is we cite the 7 acres, we do the jurisdictional thing that says if you want to build something else in there, come back and ask for a jurisdictional termination. Just to be concerned with, you know, they could all of a sudden build 4 separate 45 megawatts gas plants and just say that none of those are in our jurisdiction. Well, because they already have the approval of having 120 acres.
It sounds to me like if we give them that 120 acres, they automatically have agreed to come back, and if we don't, then we've got more problems. So that's what I'm trying to understand, is if we do the 120, we actually are providing more public protection because we're forcing them to come back. They can't come in and plop something new in there, versus if we'd give them the 7, then they can duck under some of the requirements for siting and possibly come in there and do something. That's what I'm trying to get at, you know.
I like making the sites as small as we can.
If we go to 120, do we have any confidence that the water all drains the same way? You know, we had the one concern about the water drainage from these 7 acres. I can't tell from this map. It doesn't look very hilly because it was farmed at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But that water could still be draining a different direction onto different people's property and that weren't concerned because they know that the 7 doesn't drain onto theirs.
Well, that's real valid, and I was also wondering about neighbors. But again, it sounds to me like we might actually get more protection with a bigger site. And Pat, is that wrong in your view of this, two corridors and...
I guess a whole bunch of thoughts came into my head as this discussion was going on, but one of the thoughts I had was if it's unclear, I mean, it's pretty clear that they're asking for the 7 acres, but it's not been very clear to me whether they were asking for 120, and in everybody's mind, whether they're asking for the 120 or 140, whatever it is. So you would want to have a complete record if you were going to make a determination for 120 to 140 acres and ask all the questions that you want to ask. The there was a phase one, is my understanding, of 45 megawatt, and then the phase two is 45 megawatts.
No, phase two is 90.
90, okay. So that one does exceed the requirement. Okay. It's true that if you do 120 acres and they build another energy conversion facility, Matt was saying if they build another energy conversion facility in that 120 acres, they would come back to the commission. But Matt also said that it has to be an energy conversion facility. So if they built a 45, they wouldn't have to come back to the commission, except for under the site change, they'd be changing the plan on the site.
Yeah, they're agreeing to any modifications to the site plan.
And the site plan right now.
Energy conversion facilities, associated facilities, yeah. Roadway conditions in that site.
Right. So the site plan now includes a phase one and a phase two. And so if they wanted to add a 45 megawatt phase three, it would be a change in the site plan. They would come back, even if it wasn't an energy conversion facility.
Yeah.
So there, it's true that they've agreed, and there are, if you called it protections?
More leverage.
More leverage. They would come back to the commission under the 120 acres. If, and they wouldn't have to.
On the other.
For a phase three, if it was 45 megawatt, and it was just a 7-acre site.
Unless you determined that. Made a jurisdictional determination that they should, but
yes.
That's a whole other issue.
Right.
Because arguably they could have a 20 acres south of PGS and then have a short transmission line over to the other gas facility, and I'm just speculating, and have a completely different facility name.
Right.
And it wouldn't be part of this site permit.
Correct.
Yeah. When we did the wind turbine ones, we looked at where they were interconnecting at and things and everything like that to make a determination whether or not it was a separate project or not.
That goes back to the idea of doing 7 acres and saying the jurisdictional language that if you come back and do more, just ask us. All right. It's clear it could go a lot of different ways. Okay.
Yeah, but nobody has yet to explain why we're concerned about 100. What is it that we haven't looked
at? Julie, I'll just say it this way. I'm very concerned with citing anything bigger than we have a full record to support. And unless we have a good reason to bring in other land, I always like keeping our footprint that we cite very small.
And I get that. I just am trying to understand what we're afraid of that they could do.
It's the unknown.
In a bigger acre.
It's the unknown.
They could impact an environment, an exclusion area or an avoidance area that we haven't fully investigated.
We don't have a record. I guess the answer would be...
But how would they do that? Because they have to come to us and ask us for any changes to that site.
But if you were to designate a 120-acre site today without getting additional information about the exclusion avoidance areas... they came, and then they would come back. If they, actually, it's pretty well protected.
Okay.
Because
I just needed to know that. And I'm not arguing about this. I just want to know what is it that they could do right in that area that we would be afraid of.
What we're trying to do with the siting is to make sure that there are no avoidance or exclusion areas in the designated areas. And then we're pretty comfortable that when they say, under the footprint law, when they say we will not impact any exclusion or avoidance areas, we're pretty comfortable with that because we know that they've studied it before.
We've asked the questions appropriate in the hearing. They have a record supports
right
that decision. Where I don't think we have a record that supports anything outside of 7. That's, I guess, my biggest concern is there's not a record to support a decision of doing the whole thing.
My understanding is that, let's say we don't have a certificate relating just under the general siting law. They could do anything within that site based upon the recent law change, correct? Anything within that site they want without having to come back, including a new energy conversion facility?
Yeah.
That's one interpretation of it.
That is an interpretation that could be made under the existing language. That's actually what I was talking about changing when we had that bill, if you guys remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just change about 2 words in there that would fix that.
Yeah, so without this stuff, they could do that. And that's typically what we're afraid of with a bigger site, is they can come in and do whatever other things in there, right?
That's my understanding of Commissioner Call's concern, correct?
Several concerns. One, we don't have a record to support this.
Right.
And 2 is, why would we do it unless we have a really good reason?
And with respect to the record, I think if a commission makes a decision, grants a greater site, there's a potential for that to be determined as an arbitrary and capricious determination, possibly because it's not supported by the record. And that's kind of, I don't remember them talking at all about.
Right.
Yeah.
With the exception of the purchase. So that was the generation line
concerns.
It's all in this definition. But I just wanted to clarify, even under the footprint law, under the most streamlined version, they still come back. They just don't file a full-blown siting application. Mm-hmm. They come back, like your conversation in Bach and Link and 1147, to Pat Fawn, and they say, here's all the exclusion avoidance areas, and we're not doing this, and we're not doing that, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then he says, hi, I got your letter, and then they build their gas plant.
They have to certify.
They do something. Mm-hmm. They just don't do the full-blown.
Okay.
So, where are we at? Are you comfortable with 7, or do you want more information on 120?
No, I understand. My question has been answered. Thank you.
When we do one last thought, when we do corridors, we've made a conscious effort to narrow the corridor. And we used to do corridors that were several miles across. And so this is along that same kind of a reasoning, I think.
I think the only thing that threw me was the exclusion, the additional you added here that would have tightened the requirements for them. Without this, I'm with everybody else. 7, the smaller the better. But
what about
I'm
the
still
sentence?
Fine with 7.
Okay. What about the sentence, though, to further clarify that if you do something, come back to us for jurisdictional? I like that idea.
Do you want me to add that?
As Randy and Julie's thoughts, but I think that's a good idea.
Let me tell you what I would do then. In number 11, I would explain that they purchased that 120-acre rather than just saying it and had it zoned. And then I'd add an ordering paragraph that says that for any further extensions or something like that within that 120-acre site that they need to come back for a jurisdictional determination.
If that's okay with Randy and Julie, I think that kind of, I don't know that it clarifies anything, but it makes it very clear that we're concerned if they want to build more, that we want to know what's going on.
Right.
Okay. All right, so...
So I think that does take us to paragraph 11.
Okay. Take out the zoning, okay. So you're just paragraph 11, okay.
On paragraph 11 also, I think I'd scratch that last sentence.
The nearest...
Basin Electric anticipates the project will operate at or below sound levels produced by the gas processing facility. I just haven't thought about it and everything. It doesn't seem like it adds anything in there, and what they anticipate is not evidence.
Yeah. Well, the whole sound, we could spend as much time talking about that. Matt, do you have any commitments that would that we shouldn't contend S11 or Jerry or Randy or Julie? We're down for an hour, but I don't want to make sure I'm not, if you guys have other commitments.
Meeting at noon.
Randy, do you have anywhere you're supposed
to be? I can stay for a while.
Julie, you plan to keep rolling?
Yeah.
Okay.
What time is it? Is it 11?
It's 11 now, so... We can, we can go a little bit longer.
Okay.
I guess my thought in the whole sound debate is that we had quite a good discussion the other day about sound, and this is the first one the three of us have done on this, and I like your idea about not saying it's below the local one or the adjacent facility, but do we say EPA level? Do we say 55? Do we just leave it out?
In this, what you see here, I didn't say what the level was. I just said this will not exceed the recommended guidelines. If you look in the application, there's a table that has a few different guidelines under different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And you know, I hate the idea of putting a number in like we've been doing on some of these, and it kind of catches the idea as if it's a standalone number. I don't think it really is.
I can buy that argument. Yeah. But do we even have to, I mean, why is sound listed? I mean,
it
this
was not in our proposed order at all. I only added it because it was missing.
Well, it's just it's a broader debate, but the sound has not always been, is sound a citing criteria?
Citing criteria.
It is, mm-hmm. Always. Then why wasn't in our orders 30 years ago?
It became an issue with wind turbines.
Right, that's where I was going.
And we've had some issues with gas turbines. And and so we started addressing it. I mean, it doesn't have to be in here.
Well, but might I add, we run into a problem now, especially with the situation with the pipeline pumps, where we've got this standard measuring decibels, and the complainants are saying, yes, they're under that standard, but at certain frequencies, even under that standard, is a great irritant. Imagine if we didn't put anything in there, and the standard, that it could be as loud as a train whistle 3 miles away, and you just couldn't even tolerate to live there. I mean, how far will industry potentially be able to go with things that are noisy if there's not some limits on it?
I think it's, I mean, I hadn't thought about not even addressing it and what the advantages might be of not having it in there.
If it's not in our order, they still have to comply with the EPA guidelines.
No, they're not requirements, they're guidelines.
Well, even in our order, there are still guidelines, but it's an ordering provision that says comply with the guidelines.
No, all we did was put a finding of fact in there that noise isn't a problem.
And they are saying they will not exceed EPA guidelines, so they're saying they won't do it. I think it's a good idea to consistently show that we're considering this, that it's a factor and that we are paying attention. Plus, it does force us to consider it. And they provide information about it in their applications, which I think is very helpful, and I'd hate to see that go away. You know, the whole frequency issue is something else. I think we might need to dig into the sound issue a little bit more.
What does the law say for sound?
There's no local ordinance or anything. It doesn't.
There's no federal law for sound.
No, in our selection criteria and the rules, I'd have to read it. I don't have it with me, but there's some. It's selection criteria is something less than exclusion and avoidance areas, but there are things to be considered when making your decision.
Well, I agree with Randy and Julie on all their points. I'm just trying to figure out. We put some number here, and we find ourselves with a complaint down the road that we can't even begin to address. So you look at the end in mind about how we're going to address these complaints and how you even measure whether they're tied back to the project. And we can easily put the number in and move on to the next case. But
well, or does the complaint, does the level give us some leverage for? Because if we didn't have a level in the current one, that's a problem.
But then some of these...
Would we have some leverage against that company?
What I'm saying, I guess, is the... just philosophically, that we have a number 55, let's say, if they're meeting that guideline, that should be the end of it, period. But we don't do that. We don't say that's the end of it. We continue to dig. Now it's frequency, now it's this, now it's that. So it's, I see this as becoming a bigger issue. And so we just have to figure out what we're going to put in these orders. So when we find ourselves with a noise complaint, that we either stick with what we put in here or we define it something that we will be able to remedy. That's the point I have. We just throw these numbers out there, and then when people meet that guideline, that should be the end of the complaints. But it's not.
Well, I think at this point, this is the best we've got.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I do think, and I don't remember where we left that, are we pursuing our own consultant or someone to come in and give us direction on?
That's a separate item.
My thought has been that, you know, this should be within a certain frequency, this level, but... within other frequencies, maybe even a lower level.
Well, that's just, I can't answer that.
We don't
that
have
one.
That now.
But for this?
All you have is what's in the record.
Yeah.
And noise is a never-ending discussion. I mean, atmospheric conditions and trees.
But you think, Jerry, that, see, this is a functional change, though. If we put down base electric model and indicates noise expected for the project will not exceed EPA recommended guidelines, you feel that's better than putting in the numbers that we put in before?
Here's your table on page 3-2 that says what the EPA noise levels.
Legal counsel, Matthew, what do you think about that, switching from 55 to what the EPA says?
So for outdoor activity in residential areas, an LDN of 55 dBA. Now, keep in mind that an LDN is different from an LEQ, and it gets very complicated pretty fast as to what's what. The LEQ is a 24-hour equivalent that takes into effect that noises are more pronounced at nighttime.
Right. We've had quite a little education.
Pat, you had something you were going to offer up?
I was just going to say that the 55 you're thinking of was EPA.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and this is EPA as well.
Right, but in our previous orders, we put in 55, and then that was all the further defined we did.
And so no, we adopted what the company had provided to us, which was the EPA
good point
standard.
But we never said EPA standard. We've always said 55.
And we got into some orders where we ended up saying 46 or something.
I don't remember all of them.
Oh, because we got into the LEQ.
And we didn't, I don't think, really get real specific on what we were saying, LEQ or LDN. And so I think we have some of our stuff where we haven't been as consistent as we could have been.
Right.
An LDN.
That's what I'm hoping to try to establish today with.
Of 55 is equivalent to a one-hour LEQ value of 48.6.
Okay, but in this case, the company has in their record that they want to comply with the EPA guideline, and we can fully support that finding.
Their modeling showed that they were within EPA guidelines at all of the receptor points.
Okay. All right, well, I beat that dead horse pretty good, so I guess I'm fine with that at the end of the day, but I wanted to have that discussion. So that becomes our format going forward then, unless there's reason not to do it.
So
I'm with Randy. I mean, if we're talking about going forward, I think we need to revisit the sound issue and get a little bit more
agreed.
We can put expertise. That on for tomorrow.
So for this, though, you're both fine with leaving the EPA-recommended guidelines?
I'm fine with that.
I am.
All right.
Well, as I
But wait, there's more.
Could I make one more? Could I make one more comment? I just want to check out what you're saying in the order here, real quick. But all you're saying is that Basin conducted studies.
Right.
You don't say that they will meet the EPA recommended guidelines.
Right.
Well, but I bet we have a finding that says that somewhere.
We have no. If they don't, are you going to come back and tell them to rebuild the thing or what?
Well, that's where I'm going with this.
I think all we can do is what do we expect? And we expect that they don't. If they don't, we'll deal with it then. I mean,
well,
that's the way this is written.
The purpose of the studies was to show the commission that they would not exceed EPA recommended guidelines. So we can say that the project will not exceed EPA recommended guidelines for noise levels.
That's what I said.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not in our...
Indicate the noise. I get what
it's not expected to exceed is what I said.
Not expected to. But we can say it will not. If the commission wants to, we can say it will not.
I think you just have to be sure that you have the authority to use the guidelines as enforceable regulations and standards going forward.
Right, exactly.
They might be criteria for evaluating the project and the effect of the project generated noise on public health and welfare, but that might not mean the same thing as regulations that you are going to enforce. Even, I'm just going off of what they put in their application, and whether or not that's 100% accurate, I don't know at this time, because I'm not a sound EPA sound expert by any means, but it could be two different things, so you might want to make sure you have the authority within your laws and rules to do that.
So could I ask Matt a question?
Always.
Okay, then, if they are trying to show the commission that they're going to stay under EPA recommended guidelines, then wouldn't the commission be able to say, yes, you will?
Haven't we done that in the past, though?
That's what we did with TransCanada. TransCanada, they provided EPA guidelines as their threshold, and there was a finding of fact that said that they presented that to us.
Well, maybe that's what I'm trying to say then is that it's different. I hadn't thought about it till. If it's one thing to have it in the early part of the order like we do now, but we start going into the conclusions or what we enforce, maybe that's the middle ground. We understand that this is what the guidelines showed, but maybe it isn't necessarily a conclusion of law. So we don't find ourselves wrapped around the axle in some of this stuff.
I think if it does become an issue later, that the commission can say, you need to do something here.
With or without a finding of fact.
Yeah, you need to plant some trees or something to do some noise buffering around this thing. You're always, with these orders, you're always subject to changes and modifications as deemed necessary to further protect the public or the environment. It was a standard clause in the certificate and used to be in the order.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just pointing out that this finding of fact does not make a requirement. It just says that they did studies.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the middle ground.
It does not. What its attempt to do is to show that it's not really expected to be a problem.
Okay. Well, I like that approach, though. We say it's a finding of fact based on what was presented, but then we're
given a permit because we think it's not a problem. If it turns out to be a problem, well, I guess we'd have to deal with it then.
Okay. All right. I did derail us enough there. So you're going to take away the anticipates of the newly constructed project, and then you're going to talk away the nearest receptor is 1.5 miles from the project.
I leave the nearest residential receptor at 1.5 miles in there. I mean, that to me is relevant.
Okay. All right, number 12, you want to get rid of?
I moved it.
Oh, okay.
Down to the end and reworded it.
Okay, the SHPO is concurred And you said there were some questions there, but they certainly concerned with the 7 acres that we're going to end up citing.
Yeah, and they did do the whole 120 acres.
Okay.
And that was done prior to phase one.
Gotcha. And 14 to guide the...
Interrupt you. Oh, are you just going to 14 or are you on... Okay.
What do you got?
Never mind.
Okay. You know, I have to think on Julie's point a little bit, too, about the 120, but I don't know. It's just, it is kind of cumbersome how we flip-flop back and forth with what was done there.
Yeah, and...
Because by rights, we should have, as a commission, if we were going to look at 120 acres, we should ask the questions, because it may have been the better choice long-term. I can see that.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Well, with the protections that they're signing on this deal, what is this thing called? Certification. There were some, you know, advantages, but anyway.
Okay. All right. 15?
In 14, I missed 120 there. I'm going to take out in the last sentence, Basin Electric evaluated the 120-acre project area. I'm just going to take out the words 120-acre.
Evaluated the project area.
And their surrounding study area.
Okay. What does 15 give us again? With the exception of prime and unique farm and energy facility must not be sited within an exclusion area.
What 15 just tells you is there are no exclusion areas.
Why don't we just say that?
Why do we say with the exception of prime and unique farmland? Is that an exclusion area?
I think it's standard language. Prime and unique farmland is an exclusion area, but the commission, if it finds that it's a minimal amount that's being disturbed, it can cite something in that exclusion area.
Oh.
That's the only exclusion area that we can put something in. Anything else, there's no possibility of putting it in there if it's an exclusion area.
Then we have to have a finding later on that says that it's about a minimal amount is usually what it comes down to. Okay, so you think leave it in there, okay.
As far as I'm understanding this, we don't have any prime and unique farmland in the project site.
Well, makes it sound like we do. The way it's written.
Okay, there are no exclusion areas, it says.
Well, but if that goes back, now we go counter back the other way. 7 acres, there definitely is no prime and unique farmland, but if it was 120 acres, there might be prime and unique farmland.
It's not necessary to say the exception of prime and unique farmland. I can take that whole first sentence.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, just say there are no exclusion areas.
Yeah.
But do you agree with the point, perhaps not agree, but if it was 120 acres, we'd have to say that something, because that is farmland right now.
But I don't know.
Is it prime and unique?
Well, but that's a whole other line of kettle of fish that we never really defined prime and unique.
Yeah, I'd love to know what that is.
There's a classification for land that's called prime and unique farmland. And
is it the soil conservation districts?
Yeah.
Okay. But we didn't even ask that question. Okay. 16. Moving on, huh? 16.2, in accordance with the commission's directorial. What do you have here? Say it may be wrong. Okay, 17. Looks fine to me.
Yeah, and I'll clean up this numbering
and
stuff.
What's certain benefits and certain policies and practices?
Which
I didn't understand
list.
That 17 at all. Like, preference may be given to an applicant demonstrating certain benefits from the adoption of certain policies and practices. What does that sentence get at, or what does it mean?
It's language from the rules. It says in the rules and the criteria, the policy criteria, that preference may be given to an applicant demonstrating certain, and then it has a list. And so we don't put the list in here, but it's what the policy criteria says.
Is it designed for a situation where there might be two companies competing for?
I think it's meant for
service area.
I think it's more meant for sites. If there's more than one possible site, or if there's another, you can give preference to this site if it displays these things. And this selection and policy criteria are kind of a secondary thing to the exclusion and avoidance areas that I don't think they're given the same kind of weight as, it's like, what weight does the commission want to give to them?
It doesn't really apply in this case, but we leave it in because it's kind of boilerplate.
It is boilerplate, and their language was a little different. I changed it to make it the same boilerplate language that we've been using in the others.
One of the things we tried to do over the last
other
few
orders,
years,
yeah, like
the order formats orders together, because we had one format for wind and one format for pipelines and one format for this. We tried to make them similar to some level of success. Okay, so you're fine with, all right. So
I don't think we've used the exact language the same in every order, but this has kind of evolved to where it's been ended up lately.
Okay, 18, Jerry.
Okay. That's the language we've been using in previous orders. They went on and said all the great things that they were doing.
Right, and we take that out. Yeah. All right, so new 18, old 19. What about the, Randy brought it up earlier, and that one fellow that came and testified about, he's concerned about the runoff. So here we say, not a significant impact on land-based surface water and floodplain resources. Do we address somewhere that they agreed to deal with him, or?
No, I have not put anything in here on that. I thought that it wasn't an issue, but if it became one, they'd do something about it. So
let's say he comes back to us a year from now and he's upset with the runoff. What do we point to in our order that says that they had to do that? This finding here?
I think anytime there's a problem with somebody, we try to resolve it. If it's something that can be resolved, we would work with them at the time. But we could certainly add a little paragraph in here that the basin would agree to work with the landowner if there's any trouble.
Well, they said they would do that in the hearing, so I don't know.
I can sure add a finding.
Although they didn't even know where the culverts were.
No one I don't think they were going to put a culvert in. They were going to let it go in the ditch.
What's that?
I think they were just going to let it go in the ditch. I don't think they were going to put a culvert in. So the question was later if they need to put a culvert or something in, that they would take care of it.
But I thought if it was pretty, he comes to the hearing, he says his piece, yep, he agreed to it, why wouldn't we put it in here somewhere?
Yeah. What Basin was saying was that during the standard times, there wouldn't be any drainage from this pond. It would just evaporate. But if there was drainage from the pond, it would be running down the ditch. But if it did present a problem with running onto this guy's land, they'd do something about it.
Well, I mean,
so we can put something like that in.
Unless Randy or Julie, you guys have thoughts, I don't know. Why would we do it in there? We're trying to get folks
I'm
to come to
work. Should.
Yeah, okay. All right. So put that in somewhere it makes sense. And then 19. I didn't see anything there. 20.
Oh, so do we make this order subject to them getting this permit? On 19, the air quality?
There is a requirement in the certificate.
It says they have all the permits.
That they have to file a copy of the permits prior to the time that they start construction that would require the permits. And I don't know if they can start construction without having their air quality permit in hand. But as a practical matter, I can't imagine that they would do that. But in any case, they can't begin operation until the permit's in hand.
But, okay, so they get to move forward. This order doesn't say you can't do that until you have the permit. They just have to wait to be operational, and it's nothing in our order that prevents that. It's just...
Well, if the health department would allow them to build the facility and not operate it without getting their permit, they could do that under this order.
Okay.
But if the health department requires them to get that permit before building it, I don't know. But if they do, then this order would require them to get the permit before then. Just not the order, but the certificate.
Can you state for me again what it is our certificate speaks to on permits? What do we require regarding permits that they...
And as a history, these used to be ordering conditions, ordering clauses in the orders, and rather than put them in every order, we went to a standard certification process. It was just something that we kind of evolved to from the legal department. Number four, company understands and agrees to obtain all other licenses and permits and shall provide copies to the commission prior to construction activity associated with the energy that requires said license or permit.
Okay, cool.
In this project, we asked about the NEPA interface. NEPA is not one of those things in there, but we, with Basin, a lot of times we'll put in the order, must have NEPA finding of no significant impact or something in there before they can do it. So we do that. Sometimes we do break it out individually.
If sometimes there's a federal nexus, yep, that's created, if you get on government land or interconnect with...
This time there wasn't, but usually in basins there
DOE,
is something.
That there be a federal environmental impact statement done.
Well, sometimes if they're getting federal funding.
Yep, Russ is another requirement.
Yeah, so that's probably why Basin... They'd probably get a fair amount of USDA funds or something.
Yep. Okay. Where are we at again? I lost track.
I think we're done with the findings. So.
Jay, we're done.
The last one was to add the certification that it exists and is incorporated.
Okay. All right.
Where was the tree and shrub stuff?
Attached to the certification.
Okay. I don't remember what number that was, but number 22. So just wanted to, since we're talking about this, I want to throw this out and get your guys' thoughts. But we talked, and the landowner was like, I had said in the hearing, it'd kind of be nice if these companies would look to planting trees early on in their development process so that structures like this would have some protection from the road and we wouldn't necessarily see them. It'd be prettier.
Yep.
The landowner said that would be nice. That would be nice if they would do that. And then they never commented about it at all and didn't offer to do that. And I know it's not part of our tree and shrub plan. And I don't know how big of a deal it would be to companies, but is that something you guys ever talked about requiring in the past? And is that just... over the top
we talked regulation. About it, but I think if they take out a tree, they got to put in three. We never said if there's no trees, you got to plant trees.
Just as a beautification, like plant tree, as a standard kind of thing that we do.
Most of all, we never talked about it.
Do you guys think that's over the top?
Well, on their existing facility that's already being built, I don't know if they've left enough room on their land without getting out into the road ditch. Mm. And even if there is just barely enough room, a lot of times, you know, if you plant trees right near the edge of the road ditch, they just catch a lot of snow and cause problems for the highway all the time, especially on, like this is on the west side of a road. So it might cause a lot of problems for that road department.
We actually even talked the other way, quite honestly, of getting rid of the tree and shrub mitigation plan.
Yeah.
So...
you could also end up with tree roots growing underneath the
Yeah, and busting things up.
would be nice if they'd build these things further away from the roads and then surround them and, you know, stay back. But
yeah.
I think
access.
This one is probably beyond getting something between it and the road.
I think, if I recall, if I could just add, I think there was some discussion about screening. I can't remember which pipeline project it was that was going to be within the view shed of Teddy Roosevelt National Park. And I think there's either going to be an associated pump facility with that pipeline or a receptacle for the drop-off for oil trucks. And there was some discussion of protecting that view shed with some...
I think the company brought that up early, and we said, okay, fine.
Natural.
It wasn't like we brought it up.
No. And, there wasn't any. There's no natural screening requirement in the rules necessarily, but it has been discussed in the context of other projects, definitely.
It's been used as a noise mitigation tool, too.
It doesn't work, but I don't know. It's just one of those things, you know, there's so much industrial development, which is great. I'm looking for ways to maintain the beauty of our state as much as we can in reasonable ways, you know.
I think the BLM, of all agencies, has various color components built into their permitting process for tanks and stuff. There are other agencies that do stuff like that, but
yeah.
I'm not necessarily endorsing what the BLM might propose at all. But.
Yeah, they're all sand colored out there. Yeah. Okay.
But maybe it's something we should look at in our rules that we want them to stay back from road right-of-ways far enough to do that in the future.
Yeah.
I'm open to it, this one.
But not to this one, probably.
No, not to this one, but it would be something that I wanted to get the feel from you guys. If you said that's ridiculous, I would never go along with it, then I would bring it up. But if it's something you think merits some consideration longer term, then I might tinker with that thought.
What would probably be real nice here is if One Oak would decide to put trees around the east and south parts of theirs and basin around the west part of theirs. You'd drive through the middle of it, but to whatever extent it's more aesthetic to the countryside from all around the whole thing.
It would be nice if the companies would just start doing it.
Well, it's funny, though.
The communities start requiring it.
We get landowners that don't want the trees put back when we have to put them back sometimes.
Yeah.
Like they'll tear out something, the landowner doesn't want the trees back.
Oh, thank God, that weed's gone.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And then the trees don't grow in that part of the state naturally anyway, so then we have a dickens of a time.
Yeah.
And in that case, we usually let them plant them somewhere else.
Yep.
If the landowner don't want them on their property.
Plant them in my backyard.
Yeah. We have a plan that's required to be approved by the commission as to the replacement of their trees. So they're supposed to get approval before they replace them.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
If you have room in your backyard, no, please contact me. Okay, so we did
conclusions of law, Jerry. Yeah, and I didn't touch those. Those are pretty standard.
Legal mind, do you have any concerns with the conclusion of law that you have reviewed?
No.
No. Okay. So then the last page, the order, you cleaned up a little bit, Jerry?
Pretty much, and I added the standard language that we've been using on the certificate-related order. Just changed their language on that and added that conflict statement.
Okay. All right, so when can you have this thing cleaned up for us to look at again?
I was kind of...
Want to vote on it tomorrow, Jerry?
On the next agenda.
Meaning like tomorrow? 27th.
To have it on the agenda for the 27th. And so let me clean it up and get it to you within the next day or so here.
Okay, then usually what we'll do is for Jerry will get us back out the updated draft, if you will. And if either any commissioner wants another work session, we'll schedule one. If not, sometimes we'll just vote on them.
Okay. So, how can I ask when they submitted this? How long we had it? I'm just trying to get a feel for how long, you know, the process.
I'd have to check the emails, Matt. Do you remember?
It's been a while.
Like 2 weeks ago or something?
Maybe longer than that.
Maybe longer.
They're usually pretty good about getting our stuff. It's just a matter of...
We scheduled the work session before we had it.
Oh, yeah.
And then it came quicker than I thought it was going to come. I didn't really know when they'd get it here. And so we ended up... We could have had this work session a little sooner, but it was already scheduled, so...
Okay. All right. Well, Randy, Julie, you have anything else? Matt, Jerry, Pat? Okay, with that, we'll close the work session on case number PU12509. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
That was one of those.